Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Electric Leftovers. My name is Jason. This is episode 353. Moving ever onward with Castlevania stuff. That's what we're doing. How are you? Has it been good? Has it been a good time? Your old pal Jason, he's fine. Thanks for asking. Nothing. We're just going to go. Over at the website this week, we have some new episodes of Parasite Eve along with Shadowgate for the NES, which we streamed on Monday night. Still working on that Castlevania 2 thing with Metroid Quest. I have not played it in the last two versions he sent because I've been busy doing other things. So I'm going to try and remember to get some of that done today. Other than that, you know, nothing really new happening over there. Got some new songs added up to the website if you want to check that out. And it's really all I got. There's just not a lot happening this week, which is, let me tell you, it's just fine with me. I had absolutely no complaints. On the show, however, we will be talking about Castlevania, Aria of Sorrow. You know, we archived that last week, and we're going to review it this week. And since it's alphabetical, the next one we're going to be looking at here in just mere moments, Castlevania Bloodlines for the Genesis. So stick around to hear the back of the box for that and some music. Castlevania Bloodlines is an interesting little game in that it's, well, other than the opening, which you're going to hear in mere moments, a lot of the music pulled from other games and translated onto that really horrible Sega Genesis sound chip. That's right. I said it. Bite me. Refuses to forget the Belmont family's horrifying bloody destiny, and in 1917 two of its descendants are summoned by fate into epic battle. Their enemy, the most evil incarnation of Castlevania legacy to ever rise from the grave, the Vampiress Countess Bartley. The spine-tingling six-stage fear fest overflows with graphic sights and sounds from your worst nightmares as John Morris, the whip-wielding vampire hunter, or Eric Lacard, master lanceman, you'll pursue the demonic countess all across Europe before she resurrects Dracula for a final reign of global terror. Alas, her trail of doom is laden with zombies, hideous mutants, grotesque giants, ghouls, and ghastly creatures. Taste the sweat dripping into your mouth as you try rescuing yourself from diabolical traps. Feel the torturous strain on every muscle as you wield again and again sacred weapon power-ups such as holy water, the battle axe, the crystal blade boomerang, and the mirror of truth. But in the end, make sure you've saved enough strength to scream. Okay. You're gonna want to. This is Castlevania Bloodlines. It's an action game for the Genesis, developed and published by Konami, released in 1994. There was a brief moment where Konami was putting out, there was a Castlevania game on the Genesis. There was a Contra game. Contra Hardcore was on the Genesis. I don't remember if it was Sparkster or Rocket Knight we got on the Super Nintendo, but whichever one it was, the other was on the Genesis. It was a Konami thing. They kind of had this, yeah, we're doing two different things. What are you going to do about it? Bloodlines is fine. There's nothing that really makes it stand out in terms of a video game, other than it's just a Castlevania game on the Genesis, much like the Wily Wars is a Mega Man game on the Genesis. Not a very good one, but it's there. What makes Bloodlines more interesting, number one, you get to pick characters. That's kind of cool. But number two, in the greater Castlevania canon, the names Morris and Lacard do show up in later games. Because, you know, they all tie together. It's neat like that. Anyway, 6 episodes. I'm not super great at this game. We had it. For the brief little while we had a Genesis, if I remember right. Never played much. Didn't get very good at it. I know Jade Farrow from over at Low Bias Gaming did a Let's Play of this as well. He took the John Morris path. I took the Eric Lacard path. So if you want to A and B those and see how much better he is at it than me, please feel free. Okay, Aria of Sorrow, that's what we're here for. Wow! 2,203 people say this game is outstanding. 4.5 stars. 1,394 people say it's just right difficult-wise. Gave it 3 hearts. And 1,068 people say it's going to take you 28 hours, or excuse me, 23 hours. I was looking at the wrong line to finish this game. Well, let's just see. Let's just go see. If you remember, I told you guys last week, I kind of did like a mini little challenge run of this thing. So took me longer than it normally would. 5:55, 11. So 6 hours, which quick math, pretend to type. Yeah. 20, confirmed 23 greater than 6. So. That's wrong. And I 100%ed it. I did do some off screen, but not 24 hours worth of gameplay. Hell no. I agree. We'll get into that a little later. Who do we got here for our reviews? Vic Viper. Vic Viper. Me talked pretty one day. Said an excellent Symphony of the Night inspired game. Vic Viper, I hate you now. Psycho Penguin says more like Aria of Psycho Penguin's Sorrow. That's not funny. Platyphilis, that's a neat name. I like that one. Full reviews. Anybody?
Hello?
Horror Spooky, best Castlevania on GBA. Which ain't saying much because the other two suck. Officil's here to tell us third time's not a charm. Everybody, no one has given it less than a 7 in any of our regular contributors. Let's see. Anybody? Bueller? Nope. This guy in the GameSpot review looks like a very inflated Joel Hodgson. Look him up. You kids, look him up. Let's do this one. Here's the other problem. There are no bad reviews for this game. There are 3 yellows. We talked about that last week. 3 yellows. A 7, a 7, and a 6. And no regular contributors. We'll look at these 3, he says, trying to remember how numbers work. I want to look at them and see how long they are. Well, that's a long, short review. But the other 2 are pretty short. Murder, Death, Kill, which was my high school metal band, in 2003 says, holy crap! Wait, I beat it? Graphics 10, quite simply utter perfection. Soma animates almost as well as Alucard did in Symphony of the Night, and I hate you already. There are other Castlevania games. There are better Castlevania games. Symphony of the Night, full of issues. Full of issues. Here's what I think, but we'll get to the review in a minute. The same people who are like, oh my god, Symphony of the Night, that's the greatest Castlevania ever, are probably the same people that, oh my god, Final Fantasy VII, that's the greatest Castlevania or Final Fantasy ever. It's also the greatest Castlevania ever, apparently. And the reason I think that's a thing is because you say that people, oh, what was the first one you played? Well, I played the first one and it was hard. So then I got a PlayStation and played this one and beat it. That's 90% of the time. I'll bet you that's the thing. The backgrounds are simply awesome, not to mention colorful as hell. Hell's known for its vivid colors. Enemies are just great, though some are recycled from Dracula X of all games. What the hell does that mean? Despite this, they still look great and don't detract from the game at all. Not to mention, nearly everything in this game has some awesome touch that you just have to look closely to see, like the blood trails zombies leave when they stagger after you, or Death's sweet intro, or the downright freaky last boss, or whatever happens to the Legion after you beat it. Too bad it's on some small GBA screen and not on, say, a TV powered by the PlayStation 2, yet. In parentheses. Bad news, Murder, Death, Kill. Ain't gonna happen. Unless it did. It might be, there's a Castlevania collection on Steam, and there's probably on the PlayStation or Xbox store as well, and this might be in it. I don't know. Anyway, Sound 9. Certainly light years beyond Harmony of Dissonance's absolutely horrible soundtrack. I agree. Though it isn't the most earth-shattering soundtrack ever, excuse me. That's a shame, considering the composer of this game did Symphony of the Night. Shut up about it. As well, whose soundtrack is absolutely classic? No, it's not. It's average. Sound effects, though, are perfect. Voices are much more widespread in this game as well. Tons of smacks, shredding sounds, yells, and death yells. Not to be confused with yells. Gameplay 9. The game certainly has something neat with the soul system. Instead of DSS cards, which is in Circle of the Moon, which is horrible, or the spell fusion system, which... maybe Harmony of Dissonance? I don't know. You get to suck the souls right out of your enemies. Not really, which unlocks some really nifty abilities. Oh, that's very true. My favorite being the ability to spawn little scythes like Death himself does. Sub-weapons are gone, though many of them return in some form or the other as shooter souls. The game itself is rather challenging, but not impossible, which is a letdown as classic Castlevanias were known to put up a mean fight before going down in some rather beautiful-looking flames. The main downside, though, this game is short. I mean 10 hours short, getting everything. That's a shame. Whoa, hold on, murder, death, kill. Did you not see the front page? 23 hours, says right there. Replay value 9. There are over 110 souls to find in this game, a great big castle to explore, 3 endings to find, a hidden character to play as, a hidden mode to earn and play through, and tons of little things you just have to see to believe. You may have played this game for a short time, but it'll be one hell of a busy time. what is the problem if it's so short, if there's like 9 different modes? Overall, 9. This is easily the best Castlevania game on the GBA, and one of the best games on the GBA overall. If it weren't so short, it would be absolutely perfect. I agree. Best Castlevania on the Game Boy Advance. Probably one of the best Game Boy Advance games. There's not a lot of good Game Boy Advance games, though. The Game Boy Advance kind of sucks. Anyway, Murder, Death, Kill gave it a 9. Let's go and see what Mr. Jason said, also in 2003. Here's a fun fact. Your old pal Jason, that's me, worked in a couple of music stores, but my first, like, real job, you know what I mean, was at a music store. And we had a customer who was Vietnamese. And no, for whatever reason, nobody else who worked in this company could understand a word the man said. I understood him just fine. But he would always call me Mr. Jason. But with his accent, it was more of a Y sound than a J sound. So it was Mr. Yation. And so, you know, I picked this one because of not that, but what we're about to read in a minute. Give me a second while I have some coffee. So, Mr. Jason, not me, said in 2003, it feels like Harmony of Dissonance, but better. Harmony of Dissonance may have been the worst one on the Game Boy Advance, so that's not saying much. Castlevania games have come a long way since the NES. I know there's like 2 other consoles between that one and this one. Most people have either heard or played at least one Castlevania game in this series if they have general knowledge of the video game world. They've heard one, not heard of, but heard it. Although Castlevania was introduced on the NES, I don't think that's 100% true. What put the series on the map is Symphony of the Night for the PS1. That's very not true. Now we are in the new console age where things are more advanced and sprites are outdated besides on the Game Boy systems. That's also not true. We are now in the year 2001, where the GBA was released. But you were in 2003. Following its release was Circle of the Moon, the first of the GBA games for Castlevania. Or the first of the Castlevania games for the GBA, would make more sense. In 2002, the second game was released on the GBA, Harmony of Dissonance. It was very similar to Symphony of the Night in many ways, although it did have poor music, which is very similar to Symphony of the Night. It is now summer of 2003, and the third game, Aria of Sorrow, is released. How good is it? Read the review! No punctuation. Yeah, probably gonna read it. That's why I'm here. Graphics 10 out of 10. Far superior to HOD, Harmony of Dissonance, in many ways. Instead of the main character sprite being flat, it's more of a pseudo 3D type sprite that actually looks like real movement. You know how pseudo 3D looks like real movement? The castle looks very similar to HOD, but is more lit up and has more background animation than HOD had. Every time he types it, I'm gonna say it like that. Sound, 9 out of 10, the best music of the Castlevania games on the GBA. The sounds range from average screams to 2,000 plus year music. I don't know what that means. Story, 8 out of 10. It's 2035 and you are a young 15-year-old boy named Soma Cruz in Japan. I think we're older than that. You are waking up, or excuse me, you are walking to the shrine you live at. I don't think that's true. And you and your childhood girlfriend are sucked into a solar eclipse. Only to wake up in Dracula's castle. I don't think the first half of that is true. The solar eclipse and the waking up in the castle is true. Which was the first thing when I played the game initially. I was like, oh god. You later find out that Dracula is dead for sure. And the legends says that in 2035, a young man will inherit all of Dracula's powers. Dracula switches between a proper noun and a regular noun several times in this review. Challenge, 6 out of 10. Excuse me. Sadly, one of the flaws in the game is that it is the easiest Dracula game on the GBA. I thought it was a Castlevania game, but that is true. You can easily beat this game in 15 hours if you really try. No, it's 23. You guys are bad at this. But what makes up for it is the extra characters you can use after you complete the game. Well, extra character. There's only one. Final 10 out of 10. Because, you know. Graphics, flawless, sound, pretty close. Story, it's good. Challenge, not very good. Final, perfect. Although lacking in some areas, then it's not a 10 out of 10. You can't say 10 out of 10, but it is lacking. Then you minus from the first thing. AOS, Aria of Sorrow, is definitely a great pickup for the GBA. Not only is it a great RPG, but has quite a few extras that you can unlock. It is definitely an experience. My rating is 10-10. No punctuation. Rating 10. Thanks, Mr. Jason, for giving Jasons all over the world a bad name. You and Jason Miller. Okay, this one's still considered a short review. Was a little longer. Also from 2003. Everybody played this game in 2003 and then immediately ran to GameFAQs to review it. Scrub King says, "Dark days for the Castlevania series." When I and most people think of Castlevania, the first thing that pops into my head is a courageous hero that wields a whip who is out to destroy Dracula. Got a problem with that sentence already. When I and most people think of it, the first thing that pops into my head. So when other people think of Castlevania, I'm doing it right now. So are you. There it goes. He just had a thing pop into his head. Castlevania started out to be such a good story and series. Did it? But now it has been reduced to a shadow of its former self. This is a good game, but the story, characters, and feel of the game are not Castlevania-like. It feels like I'm playing a cheap vampire hunting clone made by some unknown gaming company. It's very disappointing to see the legend of Simon Belmont flushed down the toilet with such disrespect. You might see what other games Scrub King has reviewed. Presentation. Like I already said, this game feels like some vampire hunting clone and not a true Castlevania game. For starters, there is no whip in this game. Period. I think there is. With that said, I should end this review because what is Castlevania without a whip? Vania, I'm not going to type it out anymore, he says in parentheses, was founded on two things, a whip-wielding hero and Dracula. Neither of those two fundamental elements are in this game. Yes, the names of Simon Belmont and Dracula get thrown around a few times, but that's all you will get. However, I want to go back to the whip situation, which is a great disappointment for me. Scrub King, you okay, buddy? For all of the different types of weapons, there is not one measly whip in the whole game. Unless it's a secret weapon that I missed, there is no whip. And when you consider the amount of weapons available, three or four whips is not much to ask, even though the whip should be the hero's main weapon. Okay, let me... hold on. Scrub King, I need you to sit down. My face is here. Focus. It's explained in the game why that's not a thing. It tells you why that is several times. Why you don't have a whip, why somebody else does. Your name is Soma Cruz. You're not a Belmont. You're not a Morris. You don't get a whip. That's how these games work. Excuse me. For goodness sake, you can even find a 9mm handgun. In 2035? What is this madness? What are we supposed to do now? Cap Dracula to death like some gangster? Yes. That's exactly what you're supposed to do. If you want to use the gun, it's terrible, but you can do it. To add to the disappointment of the absence of a whip-wielding hero, all of the main characters are modern and even futuristic looking. Game takes place in 2035. He wrote this in 2003 and is complaining that they look like they're from the future. The game is supposed to take place in the present where some part of Dracula still lingers, parentheses, his castle, and every X amount of years a new Dracula is chosen to inherit his powers. No! No! That's wrong! That's wrong! It tells there's an opening cutscene! Like the first sentence.
It is the year 2035.
That was my Transformers narrator voice. Where the hell were we? They could have come up with something better than Dracula's castle floating around in an eclipse for all eternity, calling on people to become the new Dracula. I think that gets explained in one of the previous games. Frankly, it's plain dumb because the main character is made aware of this and yet does nothing to get rid of the castle or take away its power so that Dracula is never revives again. No, that's what you do. That is your goal. The thing you are saying he doesn't do is the thing you set out to do. You got everything is wrong so far about this. So now we have no whip, dull story, and now we have weird characters. Please put now in the sentence a third time. I understand that the game takes place in the present. It doesn't! But it is very awkward to see your hero dressed in a business suit and trench coat running around a medieval castle fighting the undead. He's not! Apart from the weirdness factor, the characters look pretty cool. What? So I would say this game is not worthy of the Castlevania name. Gameplay. That was all presentation. Gameplay. Although this game is not Castlevania worthy because of its great deviation from the Belmont tradition, it is still a pretty good game. It is also fairly deep when you consider the plethora of weapons, armor, and accessories available to you in your mini quest to leave the castle. But you just complained about the weapons. And yes, exiting the Castle of Dracula is your main priority, and not finding or killing Dracula's successor, very lame indeed. You have to do the one to do the other. You can't leave if he's still alive. It's the last... Anyway, the game is in the style of Simon's Quest, but on a bigger scale. You would think that the map is a bit larger, even though there are still about 4 or 5 bosses. You get the ability to absorb your enemy's powers and use them for yourself, which is the main attraction of the game, but sometimes you have to kill countless numbers of the same enemy to get it. Yeah, that's how drops work. And getting all of the enemy's abilities, if it is possible, it is, will take a lot of luck or a lot of time. You have to get 100% of the souls to get, like, the true ending of the game. So, what is your name? Scrub King didn't do it. There are a lot of useless things in the game, like Dracula's books, which you do not need to beat the game. Well, they give you hints on what you need to do, but you just said it's like Simon's Quest, and there were books in Simon's Quest that give you hints. Also, there is a store, ridiculous, that a crazy military man sets up at the front door to aid you in your quest. That ridiculous was in parentheses with an exclamation point. Why are stores? There were stores in Simon's Quest. You had the shady man, and then the tall guy who's like, "I'll exchange a white crystal or a blue crystal for a white one," and then you don't even get the option. He just takes it. He doesn't even tell you why he was there, but for some reasons wants to sell you things in the middle of nowhere. No, he does. He does tell you, and he's not the middle of nowhere if he sets up at the front door. You said that the sentence before. Also, you never see him inside the castle more than once, and yet he manages to get powerful items that you cannot and sell them to you. That's how the... It's... You don't have to see him out grinding enemies for weapons. Why isn't he finding a way out of the castle if he can get a hold of powerful weapons and items that you can't? Because then you wouldn't be playing the game. It makes no sense, but you will find yourself making a trip or two to his store to buy gear. You really don't have to. This is very important for those who want to buy this game. This game is extremely easy. Be warned, the only reason it takes any length of time is because you want to get experience and gain enemy abilities, which can take forever. Which he put in parentheses, which did not need to be in parentheses. Why do you need the experience if the game is so easy? Most of the gear you use you can buy from the guy at the store, so you don't even need to explore that much. I stumbled upon the last boss by accident and still defeated him completely unprepared. How do you stumble on the last... Oh, God. Oh, God. Oh, God. Look... Ladies and gentlemen, he's not wholly wrong. He's accidentally correct. You don't have to go searching for items and weapons and armor in this game to beat the game. You don't have to. You can go to the store and buy it. But money is so scarce in this game, it takes you longer to get the money to go buy the thing than it does to just wander around and find the thing. Sound and music. Although the tunes are undead-like and haunting, there is nothing that sticks out at Castlevania worthy. You know how I know he? There's like three things that have told me he hasn't finished the game. Number one, if you can capture all the souls, which you can. Number two, the thing about the whip. Number three, he said the final boss. He didn't. I promise right now, he didn't. And I guess number four, complaining nothing Castlevania worthy in the music. Hold on, I don't have it in front of me. Let me pull this. Excuse me while I whip this out. Heart of Fire. That was the second track in last week's show. That's a Castlevania track, if nothing else. Like, that is the chef's kiss in the soundtrack of that game. It's beautiful. And where it happens is the thing he missed. And it's not like it's hidden. You know, it's not like it's hidden. You can do it. It's pretty easy. Anyway. I literally hummed the tunes of Simon's Quest while I played because everything else was dull. The sounds are interesting and well done, especially the evil butcher scream as he dies and squirts blood everywhere. I challenge you, whatever your name was, Kibbles and Bits, Scrub King, to have a Castlevania 2 hum off with me. Summary, this game is a pretty good game for those who want a quick romp with no story or logical reasoning. You know, no logical reasoning like a vampire coming back to life every 100 years to just be beaten up by the same family of people with the whip. Story makes no sense. The bosses are wimps, except for one or two, and the game isn't even about killing Dracula. If you finished the game, you would know. But you didn't finish it. The hero is also a wimp, but he looks cool. No, he's really not. And once again, this game is not worthy of the Castlevania name, and I can't stress it enough. So to close, I will say, good game. Yes. Castlevania, no. He gave it a 6. All right, Grumple Siltskin, Scrub King, that's your name. No longer an active member, thank God. Contributions, reader reviews. Ari of Sorrow gave a 6. Lunar Legend, which is one of the Lunar games, which I've got an upcoming Let's Play of Lunar, Silver Star Story Complete. Let's see. Lunar Legends. Yeah, that is the Game Boy Advance version of Lunar, which is in Silver Star Story Complete. He said that was worth a 9. Get the PlayStation version if you're going to play it. It's going to be better. Pokemon Pinball was only worth a 6. Samurai Jack game got a 9. Super Monkey Ball Jr. got a 4. This game is not for the hot-tempered. Uh-oh. Someone threw their Game Boy across the room. Superman, I don't know why I said it like that. Countdown to Apocalypse 1, X2, 4, X2 Wolverine's Revenge. And then a couple of Yu-Gi-Oh games. He likes the Yu-Gi-Ohs and the Samurai Jacks. Trophy Hunter 2003, best hunting game ever. Grand Theft Auto Vice City got a 9. Red Faction 2 got a 7. Well, I don't know, Scrubbing Bubbles, if you played any other Castlevania games. It sounds like you played Castlevania 2, which I appreciate, because that's a good game. I don't know what you want, man. You got so many things wrong. You got so many things wrong. How could you be so wrong? I'm still mad about that review. I'm still mad. And it's not just because I clicked stop and then start recording for this segment mere seconds ago. Ruined my day. Our lead story overstimulated a British artist known as Mr. Doodle. Oh, it's probably scrubbing bubbles. Real name Sam Cox has doodled throughout his entire mansion in Tenterden, Kent, United Press International reported on October 4th. Everything is covered. Walls, furniture, kitchen appliances, textiles, floors, ceilings. Cox shared the doodle house with the world on a YouTube video, taking viewers through the process from stark white to completely doodled. It took him 2 years, 240 gallons of white paint, 401 cans of black spray paint, and almost 2,300 black pens to complete the project. His wife, Elena, is all in with the doodle decor. Yeah, I would hope that would be a thing you worked out before you started. Or before the wedding. Great art! Why isn't this in the last section? Keith Tyson of Sheffield, England, has maintained a striking topiary he calls Gloria in his front garden since 2000. The bush depicts a woman, lying back in a reclining position with her knees bent. But MSN reported Tyson has a problem with random drunken louts entering his yard, usually during the night, and becoming intimate with the shrub. For one thing, he said, the noise wakes him up. But more disturbing, the act damages Gloria's figure. Someone will squeeze the breast, he said, so that will damage it. They're climbing on top of her and pulling her legs apart. You know, it's disgusting. Now Tyson is begging his community to leave Gloria alone. One Twitter user suggested he grow a thorny vine through her to deter the assaults. You know, they're ambitious, I guess. I'll give them that. Because just thinking about it, I'm like, ow! The American Tourist. On October 5th, a man who appeared to be about 50 years old asked to see Pope Francis at the Vatican in Rome, CNN reported. Oh, I know this story. When he was told that would not be possible, he hurled a Roman bust to the floor in Museo Chiaramonte, then upset a second one as he rushed out. The man was detained by Vatican police and turned over to the Italian authorities. Both statues were around 2,000 years old. They still are. They're not statues anymore, but they're still around 2,000 years old. Press office director Matteo Alessandrini said the busts were, quote, affixed to the shelves with a nail. But if you pull them down with force, they will come off. He said restoration work had already begun. Affixed to the shelves with a nail. Trying to think of how that would work with a bust. Think it worked very well. The Other Border, KTUU-TV, reported that on October 4th, a small boat carrying two men landed near the community of Gamble on northern St. Lawrence Island, Alaska. According to the town clerk, Curtis Siluk, the men told villagers they had sailed over 300 miles from, oh boy, Egveginot? Yeah, we'll go with that. In northeastern Russia, and were trying to escape the Russian military draft. Senator Dan Sullivan conferred with the Department of Homeland Security, and Governor Mike Dunleavy said they were transported to Anchorage, where federal authorities were sorting out their status. Quote, we don't anticipate a continual stream of individuals or a flotilla, Dunleavy said. Yes, it's Alaska. Asylum seekers, let them in. That's how it works. Inexplicable. Tyler Monk, 34, an exterminator in Kinder, Louisiana, is changing. There was an ellipse, so I figured drama. That is, his skin is darkening from white to black, apparently because he briefly tried Prozac in January 2021 to help with his anxiety, the New York Post reported. The fact is, doctors don't know why I'm changing colors, Monk said. He's a very old 34. After 2 months, Monk's arms and face took on a grayish tone that continued to darken even after he stopped the drug. First, they thought it was photosensitivity, but I've been covering up and I'm still getting darker, he said. He has seen 8 specialists and more appointments are on his calendar. His family is supportive. We don't really mind the color change as long as he's healthy and okay with it, said his wife, Emily. Exactly like that. It doesn't sound like he's okay with it, but I don't know. Time to decorate the man cave. In continuing stories of inexplicable, well, three men were arrested on September 24th in Hernando County, Florida. I apologize. After an off-duty detective, not for the ha-ha, but for that. After an off-duty detective spied them using saws to cut traffic lights off the poles, WFTV reported. By the time deputies arrived at the scene, the men had put three lights into their van. Aaron Wood, James Donnelly, and Aleski Naumenko were arrested for theft and admitted to stealing the lights. Each is valued at $5,000. Oh, okay. Where's the weird thing? I mean, it's weird stealing streetlights, but it's kind of not exactly normal stealing anything, so... Our least competent criminal, not the guys who stole the streetlights, an unnamed 32-year-old woman didn't get far in the Mini Cooper she stole in Lakewood, Washington on September 19th, Fox News reported. The driver, who had her 4-year-old son in the backseat and a bottle of whiskey in her hand, that's my kind of lady, steered the car right into a section of wet cement that had just been poured by city crews. When she emerged from the car, she threw a television and an Instant Pot out of her car before trying to walk away. Call me. All items were stolen from the suspect's mother's home. After her arrest, crews went back to work on the pavement. Yeah, I imagine they probably did, News of the Weird. They probably didn't just leave the TV there. Threw a television and an Instant Pot. I like that. That's my favorite part. Oops, the Bay County, Florida Sheriff's Department has declared its, quote, officially out of the bonfire business. After an incident at a Crawford-Moseley High School in Lynn Haven on October 5th, the Panama City News-Herald reported. Although the agency has assisted with bonfires for many years, the 2022 homecoming event blew up when the bonfire, guess what, literally exploded. You're right. No one was injured and firefighters were already on hand as a precaution. Yeah, I would hope so. Sheriff Tommy Ford said it was unclear what had caused the explosion, but his agency would take responsibility for the incident. The district also announced they would no longer host bonfire events. What? This was a week ago. I'm sure you found something by now. Here's our story of the two W words that we never say back to back anymore. Two men were arrested in Palm Coast, Florida, more Florida, on October 6th for a heist of goods valued at $5,000. A single streetlight, Fox 35 TV reported. Boy, Rug and Lin, 48, and Rong Chen, 41, were caught red-handed by a deputy making a security check at Woody's Barbecue. The two men wore headlamps as they transferred a substance from a vat behind the restaurant into a box truck with large storage containers inside. Here's the weird. Oh, thanks. I appreciate you pointing it out. There's been so little of it. They were stealing used cooking oil, about 7,000 pounds of it. Lynn owns L&L Recycling, a company that buys and recycles cooking oil. But in this case, they tried to increase their profits by stealing the oil, the Flagler County Sheriff Rick Staley said. He said that. Because I read the sentence wrong. Who knew used cooking oil was so useful? It can be recycled for use in diesel fuel and other substances, Staley noted. Everybody knows that. That's not the uncommon knowledge. Here's the weird. People working on this website don't understand weird. What's in a name? Brian Taylor. Oh, I'll bet there's at least one A in that name. A custodial and grounds worker for the Wayne Township Public School District in New Jersey for the last 27 years. Hey, that's where that band's from. Named after the Fountains, I think. I think that's actually true. I think Fountains of Wayne is from Wayne, New Jersey. And they were named after the Fountains in Wayne, New Jersey. Pretty sure. What's his name died? They wrote a really good kind of Christmassy song. Anyway, filed a lawsuit against the district, NJ.com reported on October 6th. In the suit, he claims his performance evaluations were always superior or above average, and that he earned a manager certificate from Rutgers University, but he was still passed over for promotions. Why? Well, Taylor asserts that his managers gave higher-paying jobs to people with Italian last names. For example, he says, his groundskeeping duties, which offered more opportunity for overtime, were transferred to the Italian-American brother-in-law of a supervisor. Quote, This unfortunate reality makes working for the district very difficult for a person like Taylor, as he is a man of integrity, the suit reads. The Board of Education disputes all allegations made by Mr. Taylor and looks forward to presenting the district's case in court, attorney John G. Jeppert Jr. said. Change your name, John. You got too much of that sound going on. Is it genius? Or is it sad? Let's find out. A Lithuanian potato chip company called Chaz has just introduced a new limited edition flavor that's intended to cater to sex-starved millennials. Oh boy. Excuse me. Indie 100 reported this a month ago. It's just working its way into the news. The pear flavored, it says P dash dash dash. It's pussy. Flavor crisps, anyway. They will transport customers to, quote, your wildest love adventures, your first real love, reps for Chaz promise. Quote, oh, God. I saw it before I read it. Quote, the Chaz team is young, bold, and socially responsible, and the snack is meant for those who are brave and free. The company also suggests the chips can be a humorous gift or can initiate a romantic evening. Unfortunately, at this time, they're only available in Europe. How do you initiate a romantic evening with that? When has there ever been an evening of just, you know, rose petals going down the hall and like some horrible Will Ferrell looking thing is laying on the bed and he's just eating chips. He's like, hey baby, try one of these. Don't do that. For the love of God. right, that's it. That's it for the show.
I've had it.
I'm upset about the review. I'm upset about the chips. I'm upset about the lack of weird news. Still want that lady to give me a call, though. Lady, if you're listening to this, maybe you want to consider subscribing to the show on any podcast software of your choice and leaving me a rating and a review, because that's what I'm here for, right? If you got a TV to spare, you could pawn it, and then you could support the show by visiting buymeacoffee.com/electriclife, or you could visit jasonsgroovemachine.com, where you can see all the videos for all the Castlevania stuff. And you can see what really happens at the end of Aria of Sorrow, unlike Scrubbing Bubbles, whatever the hell his name was. So you'll actually know what's going on. It'd be a fun thing to do, right? I think so. That's it. I'm going to leave. Okay, bye.